From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show this week are Barbara Slavin, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council and Washington Correspondent for AlMonitor.com, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. And here are the issues. Russia unleashed a bold air assault on rebel forces seeking to oust Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Russian officials said the attack aimed at least partly at ISIS, the militant Islamic army that has captured a large chunk of Syria and Iraq, but there was little evidence that ISIS was Russia's real target. Rather, the target was defending Assad. In Afghanistan, Taliban fighters seized Kunduz, the country's sixth largest city, then battled against the Afghan army's efforts to recapture it. And at the United Nations, Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas announced his government would no longer be bound by the Oslo Accords with Israel, agreed upon in 1993. Tom, let me start with you on Russia and Syria. I've been surprised about the unanimity of, well, I guess I'm not totally surprised, by the unanimity of the criticism in the media of the policy, whatever it is, of President Obama facing this Russian military assault, a growing one. In the Washington Post the other day, the biggest critic of Obama in foreign policy, Charles Krauthammer, and one of the, I think, generally more supportive of the administration, David Ignatius, a columnist for the Post, generally agreed that the administration, the Obama administration, was in a bad place on Syria now.
Well, I mean, whatever else you think about the Obama policy, it's not been sure-handed, to put it mildly. The bottom line is the Russians are in. They're bombing to support and prop up President Assad. They're not bombing ISIS targets.
Mm-hmm.
It is just another opportunity of President Putin doing what he likes to do. When he smells weakness, he likes to seize on that and project himself for multiple reasons. I mean, mm-hmm. I think part of this is to make people forget about, you know, his brazen occupation of annexation of Crimea and his meddling, to put it mildly, in eastern Ukraine, but also it's a way to project Russian power and to be a player if and when Assad has to go in some part of a brokered arrangement. Whatever else it is, it's pretty clear that the U.S. and the Western alliance is not the dominant military presence in Syria at the moment. The Russians are. And that can't be good for the Obama administration.
I don't mean to pile on here, but here's the headline on the story in The Economist, and it is Putin dares, Obama dithers. Barbara, you've been a supporter of American intervention in Syria in the past. What's your take now?
Look, it's very frustrating. I was up at the UN for the UN General Assembly, and of course there was a meeting between Putin and Obama, the first in more than a year. You know, it lasted 90 minutes. It was supposed to be civil and constructive. I think those were the words that were used afterwards. And they seemed to have some sort of agreement about working together on a transition in Syria. And then the Russians, you know, Putin pulls it off again and a day later starts bombing the hell out of the wrong people in Syria. So it's hard to be optimistic. But Not to defend the Obama administration, mm-hmm. but to defend the Obama administration. I mean, there aren't any good options here, mm-hmm. and even for the Russians. Yes, they're trying to bolster Assad. Why did they intervene? I mean, they intervened because he was losing. Assad controls maybe 20% of the territory of Syria now. ISIS and other groups control the rest. Without this intervention, I think there were real questions about how much longer he would actually have stayed. And what is in the interest of what's left of the Syrian population there, many of them having fled, and the neighbors and the rest of the world, is some sort of orderly transition to something else, if it's possible. So the optimistic viewpoint would be that the Russians are intervening to bolster what's left of the Syrian regime so that there can be a negotiated solution. That's optimistic. On the other side, we have so many groups there that answer to no one. especially the Islamic State. The only reliable fighters that the U.S. has been able to find have been the Kurds.
Mm-hmm.
There are groups that are affiliated with the so-called Free Syrian Army and something called the Army of Conquest that mm. have received either overt or covert U.S. support. But how reliable these folks have been or would be, you know, particularly against ISIS, we don't know. So I think what we've seen now is an intervention that's just making an already desperate situation even more confusing, killing more civilians, more people. And I frankly just don't know what the outcome's going to be.
Tom, one of the things that's been written about by everyone is that the American officials have been surprised almost at every turn here, just you know, in the last week or 2 weeks, there was one report that American officials learned of that Russia was not only going to station some military in Iraq, but was going to mount this air assault when a Russian official knocked on the door of the American embassy in Iraq and said, you know, the bombing will begin in an hour.
Yeah.
That was just one of the surprises.
Russian general, I mean, it suggests not only is Putin sticking it in the eye of the U.S., and specifically in the West in general, but it also suggests that there's a problem with American intelligence, especially we don't know what the Russians are doing or about to do, and I've got to believe that there's probably some real gnashing of teeth of the CIA.
Barbara, what is, just to clarify this, if it's possible, I'm not sure it is, what is the American policy at the moment?
Well,
it's a serious question.
The policy is to contain the group that calls itself the Islamic State, to get as many of their leaders as possible, to cut off their finances, which remain considerable, to try to stem the flow of foreign fighters. There's something like 30,000 foreign fighters that have flocked to join the Islamic State. I think that is the number one priority, is to defeat ISIS. Far down the list would be to try to bring this war to the end somehow through a managed transition, as President Obama put it in his UN speech, a managed transition away from the Assad regime to something more inclusive.
All right, let's take a short break. We'll be right back with more Issues in the News.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts. And keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Welcome back to Issues in the News on VOA. I'm Fred Barnes with Barbara Slavin and Tom DeFrank. Barbara, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I think that there is another sort of goal here, and that is to keep the United States out of another debilitating war in the Middle East. So the U.S. has used air power, but it has not put boots on the ground as far as we know. It's relying on Kurds and others. And, you know, Obama wants to finish up his term without another quagmire, which is a perfectly reasonable goal.
Tom?
Having spent a little time at the Pentagon this week, they are scared to death that there, in some way there would be an inadvertent altercation between Russian and American air power. Now, at the moment, the Russians are bombing quite some distance from where U.S. Airstrikes have been occurring against ISIS, but they're in the same country now, and there's been a lot of talk about we need to get together with the Russians and work out some modus operandi so that we don't get into a situation where somebody shoots down another country's aircraft inadvertently and suddenly there's a much bigger problem here. So the Pentagon is not at all satisfied that there's a good way to deal with this at the moment.
Well, one of the bigger problems is how to contain, deter, stop Vladimir Putin.
Oh, I don't think there's a good way to do that. I mean, he's got all sorts of motives, as I said, and one of them is a projection of power in an area where the Russians, especially in the Soviet era, were players but not dominant players. He wants to be more dominant. I also think there's a domestic political component here. As much of an authoritarian strongman as he is, I think he's a little paranoid also, and he knows that average Russians, weary of the Soviet quagmire in Afghanistan, weary of Chechnya, they don't want to see a lot of Russian military intervention any place, but if they can intervene somewhere where it's not costing Russian lives and allows Russia to say, we're back on the world stage again, we must be respected, he doesn't mind doing that, and he will see how far he can go.
Barbara?
There are a couple other factors. You know, there are estimates that there still or have been as many as 30,000 Russians living in Syria,
mm-hmm.
Many of them women who married Syrians who went to study in Moscow during
really?
The Soviet
mm-hmm.
period.
Mm-hmm.
There is also Russia's role as the protector of Orthodox Christianity. Admittedly, there are not many Christians left in Syria, but there has been a very, very important Orthodox Christian population mm-hmm. in that country. Putin said also that a couple of thousand fighters from Russia, from Chechnya and other places, have gone to join the Islamic State. So he sees that as a threat. Frankly, I think intervening in this way is just going to make that threat bigger
mm-hmm.
To the Russian homeland. So, you know, I think that there are a number of reasons. Syria has been, frankly, the only Russian ally left in that part of the world, has historically been a Russian ally for, you know, going back to Soviet times. They have their only warm water port at Tartus. It's a combination of factors. Mm-hmm. It's not just that he wants to poke a finger in Obama's eye, although obviously,
well, he'd like to.
Obviously he enjoys
yeah.
doing that. You know, yeah. the picture of him, he's so much shorter than Obama,
yeah.
who towers over him. And, you know, so, okay, they had this meeting and here's little Putin, here's big Obama. And then the next day, you know, boom, the finger goes somehow in the eye. I don't know how you do that physically.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think there's an aspect of that, but there are other motives.
Yeah, Putin's taller when he's riding a horse.
Yeah. And so. Of course, this is also being done in conjunction with the Iranians, right? Who are also supporting Assad.
Mm-hmm. What about, you know, the word that has popped up in this whole thing in the last week, which I hadn't seen in a long time, is the word, Tom, that there is Obama's policy, which is not intervene militarily in Syria, is that he's allowed an American power vacuum to occur in the Middle East. And obviously Obama, as the economist says, when America steps back, he, meaning Putin, pushes forward.
Yes, and I think that's always going to be the case. And there's a long list of American allies in the region that are uncertain about America's resolve, including the Saudis, including the Jordanians, and others. But I go back to what we've discussed before. Obama was against the second war in Iraq, the George W. Bush war mm-hmm. in Iraq. He's tried to extricate the U.S. from Afghanistan without much success.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think he is averse to what Barbara says, is averse to the notion of another U.S. military quagmire.
Mm-hmm.
And so he...
And rightly so.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's right about that. But,
well, that
but the perception is... that the U.S. is not leading.
That leads to another question, which American officials have brought up, and that is the possibility of a Russian quagmire.
Absolutely.
I mean, they brought up the analogy with Afghanistan where the Russians
yeah.
were caught there and were humiliated in retreating.
Yeah, look, this is not the Cold War. This is not spy versus spy like it was back in the 50s and 60s and 70s. Russia's economy is collapsing. It's something like the 15th biggest economy in the world
mm-hmm.
now. Price of oil has been low.
Right.
They're going to have negative growth again this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is not a superpower versus superpower. I think we really have to keep that in mind. And if too many Russians come home in body bags, it's going to hurt Vladimir Putin mm-hmm. Domestically.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see how long this continues, mm-hmm. whether this is just, you know, a short-term thing to make Putin look good and strong and bolster Assad, and then we get into some sort of political process.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to be a long-term. Russia can't afford a major intervention. And the U.S. is intervening. Let's
mm-hmm.
face it, we are flying, you know, bombing raids, drones, whatnot over Syria. It's just mm-hmm. not U.S. boots on the ground.
Tom, what about the risk to Putin and Russia here?
Well, there is a risk. He can overstep. He can, whenever you start, as the U.S. has learned painfully in several wars in the region, whenever you start bombing, there's always collateral damage. So, and you could argue that there are multiple motives here, but one of them certainly has to be to try to change the subject back at home from the fact that Russia is once again on the way to becoming
mm-hmm.
a basket case.
Well, what about we have another the place where the U.S. and Obama's going to have to make a decision about Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. The Taliban seems to be doing better. They took over the sixth largest city. They've lost a good part of it, Barbara. But, you know, we have what?
6,000, over 6,000 American troops.
Yeah, I think it's just under 10,000. But anyway.
NATO total, yeah, but okay. 6,000 American. Right. We're going to keep troops there, I think, for the foreseeable future.
Is that enough? Well, we'll see. Anyway, we'll talk about that after this break. We'll be right back with more issues in the news.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Welcome back. I'm Fred Barnes with Tom DeFrank and Barbara Slavin. Tom, as you said, you've been at the Pentagon in recent days. How would the Pentagon take a decision by President Obama to send more troops back to Afghanistan?
They don't like it. I mean, the basic institutional imperative of the Pentagon is if you're going in, go in with massive force. It was the so-called Colin Powell doctrine mm-hmm. during the first Gulf War and the George H.W. Bush.
Is that politically possible?
No. No. And because it's not politically possible, the Pentagon wants to avoid this as best they can. Mm-hmm. I also think, this has taken a while, but I also think there's some tension at the top of the military chain of command between President Obama and his generals. I don't think he trusts them. I don't think they trust him, and it's papered over. There's a new Obama-appointed chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff mm-hmm. now. We'll have to see how that works out.
Well, he got along pretty well with the last one, Martin Dempsey.
I think he really liked Martin Dempsey, and he went to Dempsey's farewell to the military, and his remarks were not pro forma. Mm-hmm. They seemed to be quite sincere and quite genuine, but mm-hmm. But there is just some sense that the part of the Pentagon leadership that sometimes when you have to intervene and should intervene, this president is uncomfortable, and they find that a little troubling.
I don't know. It sounds to me, Barbara, like it's a stalemate at best. Comment on that, and then I'll ask you about the Middle East, about Israel and the Palestinians.
About the situation in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I'd call it a stalemate. Look, the Taliban certainly is doing okay.
I thought I was being optimistic. And
you know, went to hear Abdullah, who's the executive president of Afghanistan. He blamed the Pakistanis. He says they're still providing safe havens for some of the Taliban. I think the problem is deeper than that. You have a great deal of corruption and mismanagement and poor governance on the side of the government that is being supported by the United States, frankly. Otherwise, the Taliban would not be doing as well as it's doing.
All right. The Palestinian president announced at the UN that his government would not go along with the Oslo Accords, that both sides, the Israelis and the Palestinians, have been saying for years that they both have been violating. What is Abbas up to with that?
I think Abbas has had it. You know, I think he wants to step down. He's failed to bring about a Palestinian state, a real Palestinian state, which, of course, has been his goal and the goal of many Palestinians for many years. The Oslo Accords have been, in effect, a dead letter for a long time. They were supposed to lead to a Palestinian state after 5 years, right? So that would have been mm-hmm. 1998. Mm-hmm. And they failed. The question is whether the Palestinians will continue security cooperation with the Israelis. We've already seen some new incidents, an Israeli family killed. Are we going to witness yet another intifada? That is entirely possible. I mm-hmm. think Palestinians have had it with the Netanyahu government. They don't see any clear way to an independent state. Netanyahu has refused to put down an outline for what the borders of that Palestinian state. He says he's willing to negotiate without preconditions, but he has not exactly been forthcoming.
Tom?
Well, I agree with Barbara. Netanyahu, I think, is posturing. I mean, it's easy to say you're totally committed to negotiations without preconditions when you know that those
political posturing at the UN. I'm shocked.
When you know that the negotiations are not going to happen with or without preconditions. I think Netanyahu is trying to position himself. And once again, I think there's a policy here in Israel, where Netanyahu looks at the calendar as well, and he knows that President Obama will be in office another 13 months. I think the biggest danger, as Barbara says, is that with the Palestinians just no longer giving Israel any benefit of the doubt, with some reason, that there could be yet another explosion.
At this point, where does the Obama administration fit in?
Look, they made a number of efforts, both in the first term and the second term, to try to get peace process going, and were not successful. John Kerry certainly made an effort. I think right now they're focused on trying to salvage something out of Syria, and they're not looking to restart talks between the Israelis and Palestinians. But that could change, obviously, if there's a big eruption of violence. I wanted to say something else about Netanyahu. It was so disturbing. You know, he spoke at the United Nations General Assembly. It was his opportunity to sort of put the whole debate over the Iran nuclear deal behind him, to say, okay, you know, it's passed, and now we're going to, you know, look to strengthen relations with the United States to try to implement this agreement to prevent Iran from getting a nuclear weapon. Instead, he spent most of the speech again saying that it was a bad deal and that Iran was a terrible country and a threat. I mean, he had one quote that was just unbelievable. He said that Iran is building intercontinental ballistic missiles whose sole purpose is to carry nuclear warheads, and they're meant for you, for Europe, for America, for raining down mass destruction anytime, anywhere. Well, anyone who knows anything about Iran will tell you that the last thing that the Iranians would ever do is send an ICBM against Europe or the United States. I mean, it's preposterous. It was Netanyahu at his worst. Somebody who cannot get over it and move on and talk about something new.
But Barbara, you wanted him to say, to give a long speech about something he didn't believe.
No, well, I wanted him to say,
he believed everything he said?
I think he could have said, look, we didn't like this deal, we fought against it, but now we want to make sure that it's implemented properly. He could have focused on implementation rather than, you know, the usual 2,000 years of suffering. And
Barbara, you wanted something that you'll never get out of Netanyahu. Maybe a different
No, we
Israeli
never will.
Leader,
that's pretty clear.
Tom, what about Netanyahu?
Well, he's difficult. What else can you say? He's difficult. He's prickly. He doesn't like President Obama.
Is Israel more isolated now?
Yes.
I think he is, yeah. I think he is isolated, but I don't think he has to call another election for a while, and he'll probably outlast President Obama in office the way it's going.
Tom, I'll start with you, and that is the man who is the leader of the Republicans in the House of Representatives, Kevin McCarthy, for whom my son works, so I'll recuse myself from any opinion here, but he's likely to be the House Speaker, elected that with John Boehner retiring. At least he's the favorite. And he insinuated that there was a political motive behind the investigation of the Benghazi affair to hurt Hillary Clinton, and indeed her poll numbers had dropped like a stone. It was kind of a gaffe. What do you make of it?
Well, I think it was a gaffe, but I can't remember exactly what the Washington line is, but basically a gaffe in Washington is when somebody tells the truth.
Yeah, Michael Kinsley
said he was telling the truth inartfully, and of course Republican colleagues are enraged. I mean, anybody who doesn't think there's a political motive in the Benghazi hearings must have just come in from another planet recently. But of course, Hillary Clinton immediately jumped up and said how distressed she was about this. This is great news for her because it gives her a little more political cover when she has to go before the Benghazi Select Committee later this month.
Barbara?
Yeah, you know, it was Michael Kinsley, I think, who said that a gaffe is when a politician tells the truth. Absolutely, no, it's perfect for her. And, you know, she really needed some oxygen. She has been dropping in the polls, email scandals and all the rest. And now she can say that this whole Benghazi committee thing has just been a political witch hunt from beginning to end. So perhaps it will help her campaign.
It might help her campaign, and surely she needs help. We're still waiting for Joe Biden to decide whether to get in or not, the vice president. I expect him to get in, Tom.
I've come around to that conclusion, Fred. The longer he says nothing, makes it more likely that he will get in. And I think he would be formidable.
Yeah, well, I do too. Anyway, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Barbara Slavin, Senior Fellow at the Atlantic Council and Washington Correspondent for AlMonitor.com, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thanks for listening.